3, 2, 1.
Hey everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of Data Exposed. I'm your host, Scott Klein, and with me is a man who needs no introduction because he has been here, third or fourth time?
Yeah, third time. I give up counting.
We quit counting after one, actually.
I'm surprised they keep getting invited back.
That's right. Hey, what are you doing here?
Exactly.
Anyway, Ryan Crocker is here in the house.
That's it.
All right.
Thanks, Scott.
Here to talk about what's new in Azure DocumentDB.
Yeah, the last time you had me on the show was like the day before we GA'd, and we did the GA happy dance. I've been practicing for a couple of months on that, but I don't think the internet's ready for me to dance again. I'm not going to dance again.
I think I pulled something last time too. I think I'm still recovering
from that injury.
That's
so
right.
Sorry, folks, no dancing today.
But it will be back.
Yeah, at some point. All right, so we're just going to dive straight into it. I think we're just going to cover off, you know, what have we been doing in the last, you know, couple of months since GA. So we GA'd in April.
Yep.
We're now September. So what have we been doing? So a quick kind of lightning round for folk that maybe are watching the show for the first time and, you know, don't know what DocumentDB is.
Heaven forbid they're watching the show for the first time, or heaven forbid they don't know what DocumentDB is. But just in case.
But just in case.
For those that are out.
That's it. So it is Azure DocumentDB, right?
Right.
It's a classification, it's a NoSQL kind of database, right? So it's not a relational database, it's one of the newer NoSQL databases.
Yep.
And NoSQL databases are largely categorized into key value, graph, column databases, and then you get the last column or type called document database. And as the name alludes to, it's one of those. It's a NoSQL document database that we build, maintain, and deliver as a service in Azure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like most things in Azure, it's accessible by REST API. So everything I can do, I can manage and I can do my operations and stuff through a REST API. If I don't feel like using a REST API, I can actually use one of our SDKs. And we'll talk a little bit more about SDKs in a bit. And then the same with manage, you know, we've got the Azure portal that you can go into and do all your management operations there. You can do it through PowerShell, CLI, and you can even use your SDK and actually do a lot of that manageability programmatically.
I was going to ask you that too, because I mean, a lot of the things you said, you know, through REST or SDK, I can also do it through PowerShell.
Yeah, right? Okay. PowerShell, if you're on a Mac or on a Linux box, you can use the command line, you know, the CLI tools that we build.
Cool.
And then, you know, the biggest question is, we're not the only document database that's out there, so how do we differ, you know, from the other document databases that are out there?
Right.
And we believe we differ on those four kind of key points over there. And the first one is that we are a true service. So we're not just a product that we've taken and installed on a VM and run it as a managed VM for you.
Right.
I mean, that gets you part of the way to platform as a service, but it doesn't get you all the way.
Yeah, right? the distinguished here is that this is platform as a service, right?
This was built from the ground up as a distributed kind of service.
Yep.
And you'll see that when you start working with it, the scaling options and the pricing options, you know, you can start seeing some of those benefits of a service. You know, that's all built in, that you can, you know, really easily scale up and scale down, and the granularity is pretty small and that kind of stuff. So we think there really are benefits of building this thing as a service.
Yep.
And then as you'll see from the features that we talk about, you know, running this thing as a service really allows us to rapidly prototype and release new features. You know, whereas it's very, very difficult to do that with potentially something that you install on a VM. And then, you know, we really take this kind of strong integration with JavaScript. You know, one of the really nice things about NoSQL databases is they work with JSON.
Mm-hmm.
And JSON and JavaScript, you know, they go together really well.
Yep.
So we take this heavy kind of dependency on JavaScript. And because we've got JavaScript in our actual server engine, you can do some cool things like multi-document transactions and that kind of stuff, which you can't do with some of the other ones. And then the other one that is proving really kind of popular with DocumentDB is this notion of what we do with indexing. We've done some fairly clever things with the indexing engine. and there's a really detailed white paper out on how we do our indexing if folk are wanting to read a short little white paper on how indexing works.
Right.
But it's all out there, it's detailed and documented. But in a nutshell, we want this database to be really quick, really easy to get up and running. So you click a button, provision an account, create a database, start inserting documents, right?
Yep.
You know, when you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, you've got this bright idea for an application, you don't have to stop and provision a VM and then install something and then go apply a bunch of updates and then think about your data model and then think about how you're going to create indexes to serve that data model. You just want to start building an app, right?
Right.
And then as that app grows, you know, the data model is going to change and your data paths are going to change. So you want to quickly be able to just, you know, keep using the thing and keep evolving, right? You don't want to have to stop, take the thing offline, do a bunch of changes, rebuild a bunch of indexes.
Let me develop my application against that, right?
Yeah. Let me just keep building my app, right?
Yep.
And then be able to kind of tweak and change the back end as you go.
Yep.
And that's really what we want this thing to do. So by default, we'll index everything in your JSON document, right?
Yep.
All paths, all fields, we index.
Yep.
But we allow you to kind of then, once you understand your application a little bit better, once you understand the workloads a little bit
tweak
better.
Tweak it a little bit.
Yeah, go in, kind of tweak it, say,
turn the knobs.
Yeah. Turn the knobs this way, turn the knobs that way, slide the slider that way, slide the slider that way.
Yeah.
And make some of those kind of customizations. And we'll take a little bit of a look at some new things around indexing later.
Yep, cool.
So then the other kind of thing I just wanted to touch on is how you consume the service, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have this normalized unit called a request unit, and every operation that you do against DocumentDB, whether it's a read, a query, a write, every operation gets allocated or assigned or calculated request unit, right? And those request units are what we kind of use to do the resource governance and quota management in this multi-tenanted service.
Right, yep.
All right. So you can choose your tiers. We have three. The first one gives you 250 of these request units per second. The top one gives you 2,500 of these request units per second.
Okay.
Right. The nice thing is you can mix and match these inside of your applications. You can have some data that's in a 250, some data that's in a 2,500. It doesn't matter to us. Right?
Okay.
You can also have a 2,500 collection for 2 hours of the day, you know, when you're writing, when you're doing heavy daily updates. And then for the rest of the day, when it's kind of lower volume, you scale that collection, you scale it down to a 250, and then you save a whole bunch of money.
Right.
Because even though there's a monthly cost, our billing is granular to an hour level.
Okay.
So if I run at a 2,500 level for 2 hours, we'll take the monthly cost, work out what the 2 hours of that is, and apply that to your bill.
Okay.
And then for the rest of the day, you get charged the cheaper rate.
Yeah, so and this is kind of the tuning and tweaking knob turning that we talked about. Say, I don't need all these, you know, request units for 8 hours, I just need it for...
Yeah, and you don't have to go from, you know, a big VM to a medium VM to a smaller VM and then back to a bigger VM, which kind of takes a whole bunch of time, and you have to reset up all your clusters and your replicas. You don't have to do any
just
of that.
Move the slider done.
Just move the slider. Yeah. You know, 2 seconds later, you're being billed at a different kind of rate.
Yeah.
Cool. And the nice thing as well is this request unit, it's a normalized cost. So we actually take advantage of machine learning. So Azure Machine Learning, we've got this machine learning job that uses some internal workloads that we've got and kind of uses those to understand what the actual physical charge is going to be. And then it runs this machine learning algorithm constantly to model and predict what your charge is going to be, right? And the nice thing about that is that this gives us this kind of consistent platform.
Yeah, there's a lot of services out there. SQL Database uses this. There's a lot of services out there. Give me that uses that telemetry data to help me understand how I use my these services, and that I can apply these. You know, and it's really boils down to a cost savings.
Absolutely.
Right? We're always thinking about for you, the customer. How can we instead of charging you, hey, you don't need 2,500, 2,500 request units.
Mm-hmm.
We've done the math. We've done the homework for you. You only need 250 unit request
so,
units.
So that's some stuff that we're going to work towards in the future.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to work towards kind of being able to say, hey, look, we based on your workload, we think the index policy that you currently are running on is not optimal. You may want to think about applying this index policy and start giving you those sorts of hints and start giving you these kinds of operations.
Yeah.
Hey, look, you're running on a 2,500 kind of collection, but for most of the time, for 80% of your day, you can get served by a 250 kind of collection.
Right.
So you may want to consider scaling down and save yourself.
Yeah, use some of those the APIs or client utilities to programmatically scale down based on. Yeah.
Perfect. So that's that kind of stuff. So just a quick recap. Like I said, the last time we were here was GA, and you know we're in the cycle where we do weekly updates, and you know kind of where we're at. So you know a couple of changes that we've made. Remember DocDB or DocumentDB is this REST service, right? And I can get to anything through a REST API.
Yep.
And in DocumentDB in the past, and I'll show you in some code in a sec, we had these kind of hashed IDs that made up a URL, right?
Yeah.
But you'd never be able to kind of guess what that hashed ID is. You'd have to go look it up and then you'd know what that is. And that, those were called self-links, right?
Yep.
So it's a link to the resource. Now, we've made a change that that link to a resource can be the old hashed, salted kind of key, or it can be the IDs that you used when you created the record.
Right.
So now you can actually build up these self-links with human readable IDs, and I'll show you some of those benefits in a sec. And then we can do, when we started out, you could do range operations on numbers. It's like greater than 5, less than 9,
kind of thing. Yeah, yeah.
But you couldn't do range operations on strings. So you couldn't say, find me all records where a name is greater than A or and less than B kind of thing.
Right.
You can now.
Sweet.
The big one that everyone was asking for is the ability to do sorting, right?
Yeah.
We needed, and you know, a lot of people say, geez, it took you how many months to kind of get AutoBuy done? There was a lot of stuff under the covers that we implemented to get the foundation right for things like AutoBuy and ranges by strings. Yeah,
some of the stuff you have to get right
before you got to get it right. You can't, it's easy once you've got a rock solid foundation to kind of quickly add features.
Yep.
And we're starting to get back into that rhythm where we can quickly add those features.
Yep.
But if you start building something on a shaky foundation, you're just going to have trouble. Right.
It's band-aid after band-aid after band-aid, right?
Yeah. One of the other things that we've got now is this ability to, you know, change your indexes online without taking the database offline, without stopping requests, without stopping writes. You can go and change your index policy. And in the background, we'll just re-index the collection or reapply or change the index policy on the fly.
So it's almost like an online index.
It is like an online index. It's an eventual kind of thing. So if you're running queries that depend on the new index, right, you'll see results. You'll start getting results as the index kind of rebuilds itself. And once the index is fully rebuilt, then your queries will be kind of consistent nature again. So you may get a bit of inconsistent operations while that's busy getting rebuilt.
How long do those indexes take to reapply?
Well, it's going to depend on the size of your collection. You know, I'll show you on a 10 meg database that I've got. It's instant. On a 5 gig database, it's almost instant. Yeah. On a 10 gig database, it's a couple of seconds.
Right, okay.
So, you know, it's pretty cool. And we'll actually tell you how far, there's a measurement that you can actually see how far the index operation is.
Oh, good, okay.
Then we keep enhancing our query capability. So today we can do things like in, between, starts with, ends with, contains, all of these kinds of things you can now start doing in our query language.
Yep.
We've done a ton of portal updates. I think when we shipped at GA, you could do, you know, like an account in database and collection, and there was a document explorer and a query explorer, and that's about it. So we've done a whole bunch more in the portal. We have this cool data migration tool that allows you to get data into and out of DocumentDB really, really easily. So I'll show you that one.
Okay, cool.
And then this logical charging, that's what we spoke about previously. We had physical charging. So what that operation cost us to perform, that's what we got translated into request units, and that's what you were charged for that operation.
Okay.
Today we use ML to normalize that and flatten that out, so you don't get these kind of big peaks and troughs.
Okay.
Right? Because when the machine's hot and active, it costs less. When the machine is cold, you know, it costs more because we have to spin up the machine.
Right.
And, you know, so what customers were seeing is that request unit on their operation was fluctuating dramatically. So now we use machine learning algorithm to flatten that and normalize that, so you don't see those peaks and troughs anymore. And then we've added geospatial capability, and I'll give you some quick demos on geospatial capability.
Cool.
And then we constantly kind of do regional expansion. So we've just announced that Australia, the two Australian regions, DocumentDB is in those two Australian regions, and then we have plans to light up Japan, India, South Central, North Central, those kinds of data centers. So as they come online.
With these new...
Yeah, so with our HoloDocumentDB, right?
Okay, yeah.
So as we start hearing demand from customers in those regions, you know, then we start looking and enter into the kind of process of requesting capability in those regions.
Okay,
So if folk are out there and they're in a region and they want DocumentDB and it's not in that region, please get hold of support or get hold of me and let me know where you are. And then we can kind of start that process.
Okay, cool.
And then a feature that we're about to release is called Upsert. So you can actually then do a replace or an insert. So just perform upsert. If the document's there, it'll be replaced. If it's not there, it'll get created.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of cool. So that's
kind of an if exists.
Right? Yeah, so kind of like if exists, then replace it. If it's not there, then create it.
Yep.
All right, so let's kind of go and take a look at some stuff. So let's get out of PowerPoint and let's go into the portal. So if we kind of take a look at the portal, this is my account blade. I'm just going to go create a quick database for the purpose of this. So let's go and do data exposed. And there the database is created. And there's that strange ID that I was talking about.
Yep.
Right? So we'll see a little bit more of that. So now I'm going to go create a collection. All right. And in DocumentDB, collections really are these partitions of data. They're not logical tables as you would see in others. So I'm going to go create this partition. Here's this pricing tier. See, if you wanted to kind of go and pick a pricing tier, there's the three pricing tiers we have.
Okay.
I'm just going to go and pick that one. I'll pick that one for now because I'm going to do some data import. And here's this indexing policy. So now you can actually, we used to apply our default. There are now three defaults that you can actually choose from. So if you know up front that you're going to kind of, you know, you're going to want to be doing order buys and you're going to want to be doing range operations on your data, then you can set that one, right?
Okay.
Now that one's got the highest storage overhead, but it gives you the most kind of capability.
Okay.
So I'm just going to go set that one. And if I create that there, the collection's created already for me. So if I go into it, you'll see if I go to Document Explorer, on that there are no documents because I just created it, right? So let's go and jump into this data migration tool. All right, so I'm just going to go and add in this folder. I'm going to go add in some data. So I've got some data sitting here. I'm just going to go add that data, and it's just a bunch of JSON files, right?
Yep.
So I'm going to go there. I'm going to come in here, and I want to import it into DocumentDB. So I come into here. I grab from the portal. I grab my connection string, and I come back here, and I insert that in there, and then I just want to tell it what database to put it into. So the database I created was data exposed, and then the collection I created was data, I think. Okay. If the collection doesn't exist, it'll actually create the collection for you. Here you can actually choose what the ID field is. So we require a field called ID in every document, but if you're importing documents and you're using customer ID and you want that to be used as the ID field, tell us here and we'll then we'll do that mapping. So that's kind of all I need to do there. You can select an error output, hopefully. I didn't create any errors. This command over here, if you want to schedule this to run in a scheduler or a batch or something like that, you can actually copy that. That's the command line parameters that I've just set using the GUI.
Okay. Right?
So you can actually copy that. And then if I run this, hopefully I got everything right there, 110 documents have been created. Okay. So
and that was quick too.
Yeah.
So where do they get this? Where do they download this tool from?
So this tool you can actually download from Microsoft Download Center.
Okay.
You'll find a link to it on Azure DocumentDB's documentation page.
Okay.
It's also available as open source tool in GitHub. So if there's a source in there that you want to see that isn't there, or a destination, or you want to make a change, or whatever, feel free to contribute, and we'll kind of take that. So there's the documents now. I can actually come in here, and you can see, not that database, sorry, data exposed. I can now see that this is what some of my data looks like, and here's a cinema. You know, you can see a cinema's got some amenities, it's got an address, it's got location. You'll see down here somewhere as well. Inside the same collection, remember, I can see here's movies. So now I have movies in here. Okay, that's what a movie record looks like. And somewhere further on in here, so here's like some Showtime records, which is an intersection of a movie and a cinema. So I can see what movies are playing at what cinema at what time. And because I do things like putting all the documents into the same collection, I just use this kind of simple thing in my in every document called a type. So if I'm looking for all select star from data, you know, where type equals cinema, then I'll get back the cinema documents. Or where type equals movie, I'll get back the movie documents.
Okay.
So, you know, really, really simple, and it's a nice way to kind of put all your data into one partition, but then still be able to kind of get.
So I don't have to have different databases and put cinemas in one and showtimes in another.
So you absolutely don't have to have different collections and put cinemas and stuff. So the idea is it's a partition, it's a bag, you dump your JSON documents, different schemas, doesn't matter, dump them into the same place.
Perfect.
So that's kind of that. One of the things that I wanted to show you was this notion, our geospatial capability, right? So one other quick resource that I'd like to point people to is this document, DB Query Playground. There it is. So if I go to the document DB Query Playground, this is a cool little sandbox environment that we've put together. So we've loaded a bunch of data into it, and you can come in here and you can actually play around with the query grammar, so you can get an idea of how it actually works. So there's a query that we've pre-built. I can run it. I can then go and interact with it and do something like take out that and run it and see how does that change my kind of result set, all right? Mm. So you can do that. If you wanted to, you know, those are simple queries, then you can do, if you want to figure out how filtering works or in-betweens, order by, you know, all of that kind of stuff. There's a whole bunch of them over here. So you can do, these are some of the built-in functions. So is defined, because one of the things in JSON, I might not have the property there, right? Now, that doesn't mean the property is null. The property is not there. Right. So null and undefined are two different things.
Right.
So we have a function that says, you know, where common name is undefined. That means, or this one says where common name is defined. That means, hey, this thing should actually have a foo.common name. If it doesn't have a foo.common name, don't include it.
Okay.
Here's some examples of, you know, running a custom UDF that we've built. So that's a UDF that we've built, and that's how you include them in your, right, in your queries. The one I wanted to show you is this kind of geospatial capability. So if we have a look in the portal at my collection, so let's go find the collection quickly. So data exposed, and go to the data, and go to the collection. There you'll see is index policy, right?
Yep.
And remember I picked the index policy at the start, which was range and everything?
Range, yep.
Cool. Now with geospatial, there's a new one of these. So I'm just gonna go and do this. So the nice thing is in this portal, you can actually go and update this index policy on the fly. And you could also do this in code. I'm just gonna do it in here for now because I feel like doing it in here. So I'm gonna go and do this, and I'm gonna say, and then this is not important. So what I'm effectively doing is you'll see over here on the path of root, okay,
yep,
wherever you see a spatial record, okay. Now yep, we use GeoJSON as our spatial records. We use GeoJSON as our spatial records. So wherever you see GeoJSON in the document, index that with our with our geospatial indexing.
Okay.
So all I'm going to do here is I'm going to save this, and it's probably already done. So if you scroll back across here, you'll see there the index transformation is up to date.
Yep. Okay.
So that's that. Now, once you've done that, what you can actually do is you can do some cool things with GeoJSON. So in this query playground, we've loaded in all volcanoes or active volcanoes in the world. And this query over here says, I want to get volcanoes of a particular type that are within 100 kilometers of Redmond. Now note this is kilometers, so it's metric. If you wanted miles, that would be 100 multiplied by 1600,
yep,
so 1600, all right?
Yep.
So this one says, within 100 kilometers of Redmond, find me these kinds of volcanoes, and the last known eruption, you know, is equal to that, right?
Yep.
So if I run this, you'll see that there is one volcano within Redmond.
just happens to be right next door.
Just happens to be right next door. We can see it out of the window.
Exactly.
So it's called Mount Rainier, and that's right, it over there, right? So that's the one kind of query you can do, and it's pretty easy to integrate this into the Bing Map APIs that we've done over here. The other one that you can do is this kind of cool one that says, all right, well now I want to know a little bit more. Where else can I move in Washington? You know, I'm getting a bit nervous about living near Rainier. Where else can I kind of move in Washington? So we went and plotted out the coordinates, the polygon coordinates of the state of Washington. And if I run this now, this will show me all volcanoes within the state of Washington. So if I wanted to move somewhere in Washington, I'm pretty much plumb out of luck. I'd have to move to Oregon maybe.
Yeah.
Or I don't know, Montana, where there is no volcanoes.
Right.
So these are the kinds of things that you can do now, you know, distance between and radiuses and polygons and that kind of stuff.
That's pretty nice.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So the other quick thing I wanted to show is this ID-based routing thing. And why is it so important, right? So here I've got a simple little kind of console app. And all I'm trying to do over here is I'm trying to create a collection or trying to create a query for documents. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying where type equals foo, notice that parameter.
Yep. Okay,
that parameter says collection.selflink. Now, let me show you that using this tool, which is our Azure Document DB Studio, which you can get off GitHub as well. If I go and have a look at that collection, you'll see there that selflink there. Okay,
mm-hmm.
That link there is what we're asking for as that first parameter. Now, nobody is ever going to know what that is, all right? Unless you know, you will never know what that is.
Never know what that is. No.
All right, so what people generally have to do is they then have to go write a method that says, go and look up that collection, okay? Go and do what that tool just did. Go look up the collection so that I can get a self-link. But guess what? When I look up a collection, what does it want to know? It wants to know the self-link of the database the collection is in.
Right.
So now I have to go write a function over here that says, get me the database first.
Right.
So I've now done two calls at least to DocumentDB to get the database, to get the collection, just so that I can get at that parameter over there.
Right.
So you end up writing all this kind of boilerplate code and doing unnecessary kind of operations on the server.
Yeah.
So what I could actually now do is I can replace that with a bit of logic. So get rid of that, and now just say string. All right, oops. So I can actually just replace that with a string. Now, because it is still a string. But
yep.
The difference here is that I can actually now, I can build up the string myself if I stop touching my mouse pad. So I called the database data exposed. I called the collection data. Okay?
Yep.
That's all I need to do. Okay, that there is exactly the same in our mind as that value over there.
Nice. So okay. As long as I know,
as long as you know what the database ID is and the collection's ID is, now you can talk to it directly. You don't have to go write all this boilerplate code to get a reference to that database
and all that
collection.
Stuff out of this. Okay.
Yeah. You still do need to kind of know that, you know, the format of that string and that it's DBs and cols and, you know, that if my database name had a space in it, so if my database name looked like that, I would need to URI encode that to get rid of the space and change it to %20.
Right.
So there's still a little bit of stuff you needed to do there. But I can actually use, there's a new override method in here called URI factory. And if I go to URI factory, I can actually go and say create collection URI, and that just takes in two parameters. The parameters that it takes in is database ID and collection ID, and we will now build up that string for you. We'll properly URL encode it. We'll probably make sure that it's the right format, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So now all you have to remember is URI factory, create the collection URL and pass
in. So you can either do it either way. If I know the string, I could do that.
You can do it either way. You can build up the string yourself, or you can use these URI factory methods and kind of and let it build them up for you. So you'll see there's a bunch of different kinds of ones depending on what you're trying to do. So if you're trying to work with attachments, or if you're trying to work with documents or databases, stored prox triggers, you know, those kind of things.
Okay.
And that just will build up a different string for you.
Right, okay.
Cool.
This is very nice. So much easier to use. My code just went
I can get rid of all of that code now and
And done.
Now, it's important to know that if you kind of run this query on a database and a collection ID that are invalid and don't exist, you're going to get an error.
Right.
Right. And then you'll have to handle that error because you're effectively trying to talk to a database that doesn't exist.
Right.
And we're not going to go and create a database on the fly for you. So the database should actually be there.
Yeah. Right.
But most of the time, you know, you'll have set that up somewhere. Yeah. You'll either have set it up manually, or you have a setup script that does that in your environment, or some kind of process. So I think developers are fairly used to.
Yeah, this makes it much easier to use and get started with, right?
Yeah,
so I'm not having to write a bunch of code. This is.
So here I'm just looking very quickly for. So what did I do? Let's do a quick example, right? So. I did data exposed was lowercase. So you got to get the casing right because we are case sensitive. So, and let's just do this where type equals, what did I call it? Cinema was the one, right?
Yeah.
There you go. So in effectively one line of code, I've just done it in four, so it looks a little bit neater. But if I run that now and done. There are my results, and there are seven cinemas in the database. Cool.
Awesome.
Alrighty.
Awesome.
So that's kind of a very quick summary of what we've been busy with.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people say to me, well, where do we go next?
Right.
And it really is up to the customers. You know, we obviously have some ideas of things that we need to do to keep enhancing the product. But we really do look to customers to kind of tell us and drive.
Yeah, like we just introduced a bunch of these new features. How do they work? Yeah. What other things are you looking for?
What other things are you looking for? We introduced Auto Buy. You know, what's next? What should we look at next? I mean, we've got a list of 300 things that we want to kind of work on. Some things have to happen. We can't change the priority on all of them, but other things are flexible.
Right.
And we really are looking for customer feedback to tell us what to work on next, right?
And all of these features that you have introduced are based on customer feedback,
absolutely.
Right?
So they're all based on customer feedback thus far. So, you know, we may be some, on user voice, please go and have a look at them. You may find some items that are on there that have been on there for a couple of months.
Yeah.
We know about every single one of them. We read them every single day. It's one of the things I do at least once a week. I go through every single piece of feedback and make sure that we've got it tracked somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's on our pipeline, it's on our roadmap. Right. And as soon as we kind of plan something, start something, complete something, we'll change those statuses. The team themselves actually respond to comments on those things. And you know, if you're gonna go log a feature or vote for a feature, go log into user voice with your email address, because that helps us when we're planning. Let's say we're planning feature foo, right? I go into user voice and I log in and say, show me all the people that have voted for user foo or feature foo. And then I want to be able to go to them and say, all right, we're starting planning on this feature. Let's do a quick kind of call, you know, group call, individual one-on-one call, an email, a survey, doesn't matter, to say, well, how would you like this feature to work? You know, is this important to you? Is that important to you? So, you know, if you just go and vote anonymously on there, I have no way of kind of reaching out to you.
Right.
So, you know, if you're going to vote, well, we really encourage you to vote. And if you're going to vote, log in with your email address so that we at least have a way to kind of be able to contact you.
Right. Okay.
And then, of course, you can use our DocumentDB Twitter handle. So you can just, you know, tweet
if
it.
If you haven't followed the DocumentDB Twitter handle,
You should.
Indeed.
So we spoke about SDKs earlier. You know, if you don't want to do REST stuff yourself, because let's be honest, who likes writing REST calls natively? No.
Yep.
We have a bunch of SDKs. So we ship .NET, we ship Node, we ship Java and Python. And then in the community, we've actually had someone in the community build us a Go SDK, a Ruby SDK, a PHP SDK. So the community is kind of starting to get active, which is really, really cool.
Oh, very nice. Okay.
So on some of those SDKs, they're all on GitHub as well under the Azure org. So if you want to contribute to the SDKs or open issues against the SDKs, do that there. The management portal you saw, DocDB Studio, that cool little UI that I was using, that's where you can get
DocDB Studio. Yeah, so you showed a couple tools. The import tool.
Yep.
And then the studio.
The DocDB Studio you can get from there.
Okay.
The import tool you can get from there, so DocDB import. If you want to get started, you can actually use the get started, and if you want to get to the query playground, you can get to the query playground.
I think this is a great opportunity here. If you have not played in the playground, go play in the playground.
That's really cool.
Right?
Yeah. You can just go and execute queries and you can change them.
Great way to start working with stored procedures and the different syntax and things like that, right?
We also have another kind of cool resource, which I'll show you, is the DocumentDB query cheat sheet. That one there. Okay. We have this cool query cheat sheet. So you can kind of come have a look at that one. And if I open it, it's a PDF that you can actually download. And you can print it out and stick it up in your cubicle, but it gives you kind of, so you can actually download it and stick it up in your cubicle, and it kind of gives you some cool syntax. It gives you
some cool
kind of SQL statements. It shows you what an inter join and a UDF and, you know, a bunch of stuff looks like. Shows you what operators we support and that kind of stuff.
That's awesome.
And there's the built-in function, mathematical functions. So you can do maths, type checking, strings, array, geospatial. You know, you can do a whole bunch of things.
Sweet.
Cool.
Because we all know that our cubicle needs more wallpaper. That's
indeed
fantastic. I think that cheat sheet's a good one.
Yeah.
And really in the playground, you know. And these tools, you guys are really doing a great job over at DocumentDB land.
Well, you know, I think
to make it easy for users to use the, you know, how do you work with DocumentDB?
Yeah. And that's what we really want. We want this to be the easiest kind of JSON database to work with.
You know,
just click a button, start working on it. And we'll just keep rolling out features. As customers kind of keep asking for things, we'll build them. And then keep shipping them.
Yep, cool.
Cool.
Hey, this has been fantastic. Really have been enjoyed having you, and we look forward to having you on more.
More often.
More often, we'll do the dance. Right. So
I'll go to physio, get my back sorted out, and then we can right. Kind of come back and right. do some.
Well, everybody,
some
thanks for thanks for watching, and there we go. Our Channel 9 guy.
Sweet. Our Channel 9 guy,
our Channel 9 guy got some friends. Anyway, hey, everybody, thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you very much.